Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. As most folks on the line very likely know, Saturday, April 18th, was the International Day of No Self-Hate. And in honor of that wonderful occasion, Sherry facilitated a fabulous workshop for us. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Catherine, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the workshop, as well as her experience of living a life beyond self-hatred. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, Jen. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Big topic, huh?
Yeah. Very big. Yeah.
Very big. Where shall we start?
Well, I can start with an insight I had, which is
please
that the ending self-hate, the way to end self-hate is to be in the process of ending self-hate. And what that means for me is that it is self-hate is just going to come in.
Yep.
I mean, that's my life experience so far. And and that there's nothing wrong with me or with life because of that. And so kind of just coming to a place of kind of acceptance that this is kind of how it is, then it feels there's not that, oh, there it is again. Right. Why? What's wrong? You know, which is more self-hate, you know, which is what is wrong with me that I can't drop this and that kind of thing. So what I found, it's really interesting because I'm doing, when I tackle self-hate and when I was looking at the things that Sherry was talking about in the workshop and doing the exercises, that I'm doing the same thing I used to do, pick up the recorder or write it out. But now I'm doing it from a place of, I'm not afraid of this. It's not defeating me in the way that it used to.
Yes. It's, you know, what drops in when you say that piece, Catherine, is what Gandhi apparently used to talk about as the worthy opponent. Because it's gone from, if it can get us with, well, I mean, you've been practicing how long and this is still happening, then it's always going to have the upper hand. But if we get it exactly what you said, this is a process. This is a moment by moment. You know, we always say the Buddha practiced until the day he died. This is a process that we're practicing in every moment. Then we always have the upper hand. It can't win. Because exactly as you say, instead of feeling defeated by it, you know, you're doing all the things you've always done, and self-hate is doing the things it's always done, but it's from a completely different place.
Right.
Now it's from a place of, it sounds like, exploration and interest and curiosity and practice and all those things.
Right, and it's also like from wanting to save the human, you know, and wanting to be out from under it, but it's not. It's just not, there's no defeat in it. There's no, and there's no guilt about it or anything. It's just, oh, this is what is. And I read this or I heard it in practice from Ashwini or Sherry or that the way to end suffering is to be in the process of ending suffering. And so I just substituted self-hate for suffering because it's the same thing. But
exactly.
So, and what that really struck me when those words, to be in the process of ending suffering, because it is a process and it's not a goal. And so much of ego will set up these goals that are impossible to reach, that we don't even need to try to reach because there's nothing wrong, but sets us up and then will have me spinning around trying to, you know, scrambling around trying to meet that standard or that goal. And one of them becomes self-hate. Ego sets it up so that I'm trying to defeat ego. That's the pretense. That's the game.
Exactly.
Yeah, and if I just say, no, we're going to play this game differently. So, there's really no win or lose. I'm in a process here.
Yes.
So it's a never-ending game. So, you know, it's a never-ending thing. So it's not, I don't have to worry about winning it.
Yes, it's brilliant. You know, we were on some form of practice call recently, and I won't try to quote it exactly, but Sherry said something exactly like what you're saying, Catherine, which was so huge. Essentially, as long as we're playing, we're winning, right? And we're playing not ego's game. That's the whole thing. We're not playing ego's game, because ego's game is, as you say, well, you know, I mean, you should be past self-hatred. You should be able to defeat it. Go ahead, try to defeat it, right? And, of course, that's self-hate goading me to do that. So all of that game is played on its turf and is completely unwinnable.
Mm-hmm.
But you, what you did is you said, no, I'm not playing the game by your rules anymore, right?
Right.
I'm going over here and I'm playing life's game. Where mm-hmm. there's no, it's not even possible to lose. Self-hate
right.
does what self-hate does, and we just pay attention, and we practice, and we do all the things we do, and there's no, it's not possible to lose that game.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is just, which is so freeing. And
freeing.
A marker that Sherry gave me, and I've heard her say this before, but in a recent guidance with Sherry, that she said, if you're not happy, you're identified.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I'm not happy, there's mm-hmm. there's always going to be some self-hate in there somewhere.
Oh, you
it's
going
it. To, you know, yeah.
Yep.
So when I'm just not happy, that that is a clue. Okay. So because self-hate, as we know, can be so slippery, and it's not, if I catch it in one, you know, piece of content, then it will mm-hmm. it will transform itself into something else and come back
exactly.
at me in a different way. So, but yeah. if I'm not happy, that is the marker. And so I can then get in the process of being happy. And
Boy, that's a great point, Catherine.
Yeah.
Because I think what you're saying is it can take endless forms. Self-hate can take endless forms. It can morph over here. It can talk about that. It can, but the bottom line is, I'm going to end up unhappy, right? Because self-hate is not no fun at all. And so then it doesn't really matter that it takes a million different forms, because that can just be my red flag. Oh wait, I'm not happy. Okay. And then the brilliant stroke there that you're talking about is, of course, what's meant to happen is I'm supposed to go into self-hate about that. Oh, God, well, then I'm not practicing, right? Because if I'm happy, that means I'm identified with ego. But instead, the master stroke that you're talking about is, oh, there's my big clue. I'm not happy. Okay, I must be in self-hatred. And instead of going to more self-hatred, we go to tremendous compassion, what you said a few minutes ago. I want to take care of the human. Well, then she's stuck in self-hatred. That stings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me reach through and assist with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I feel like that, I'm going to project that lots of people have had this experience, that things that Sherry has said for years and years, and I heard, and I thought I understood, and then suddenly it's like, oh yeah, you know, it drops in, and so. You know, it's really dropping in that I do not have to live in self-hate. It's not, and it's not, and this, that I can play the game by my rules. And you know, there is freedom even while I am in the process of being human and living a human life and all that that entails. That's all just fine. I do have, I have the ability to, and the tools, you know, recording and listening is the probably the biggest, but that I have the tools to step out of the suffering and make it and see it as a process, and there's nothing wrong.
It's so inspiring to hear you say that, Catherine. It's so inspiring. And you know what? It completely points at how the International Day of No Self-Hate came about, because my phone was doing something funny. You know, have you ever heard Sherry say that her teacher used to talk about practice as a debt that can only be repaid with the same coin?
Yes.
And that on the guide's birthday, April 18th, what is so, I project, so profound is the gift that we can give, the greatest gift that we can give in terms of our gratitude is exactly what you just described.
Mm-hmm.
To have moved to a place where you get it, that it isn't as if you've waved a magic wand and self-hate's going away and, you know, you're going to walk off into the sunset where there are never any voices anymore. That's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
But to move to a place that you're talking about where you realize truly it is, I do not have to live in self-hatred. And the joy and freedom that comes with that
mm-hmm.
is tremendous. And I project that is the greatest gift that we can offer back to the practice that we're so grateful to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the greatest gift is to receive the gift.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then it's there. It's there for all. It's
exactly.
there for practice. It's there for life. It's there for us. Yeah.
That's right. That is, again, so well put. That's what has brought practice to us thousands of years later, is that all those who came before us did the same thing, the hard work of going up against that whole system that hates us and staying
mm-hmm.
with it, staying with it, staying with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we become that which embodies practice and carries it forward for the next person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm.
So grateful.
So grateful. Catherine, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon to talk about your experience.
Sure. Thank you, Jen. Gosho.
Take care. Gosho. And Michael, we'll turn the show over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Catherine. And thank you, Jen. And Jen, let me just find you here in the queue.
I can mute. Thanks, Michael.
Okay, that's great.
No
thank
pressure.
You. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
I really enjoyed that conversation. It was fabulous.
I could barely sit down.
Yes, yes.
I think Catherine articulated it so beautifully.
Yes.
At so many levels of what ending suffering is all about.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always in the process of ending it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
No goal, nowhere to get. I'm just
That's
in this
right.
game that I enjoy playing, and I'm going to keep playing it.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, what you said about acceptance, right, that there's a way in which this is how it is. This is how it is for everybody. And once we accept it, then we're out of the self-hate loop because it can't get us to feel bad and feel at fault that there's something wrong with us not beating it or that it exists and it's our fault.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. If there's not, if there's nothing wrong, then there's nothing to beat us with.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And I have announcements here.
Great.
Learning to Love Learning Group Coaching will explore how the ego process of suffering takes over the excitement, possibility, and joy of learning. This virtual class will be held on Wednesdays beginning May 13 and will look at ways to support the human to stay in love around any learning project. And for this and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, you can press *6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. Okay, I think we're ready here, Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, this is Diana from the East Coast.
Hi, Diana.
Hi, Diana.
Hello. Pardon me?
I said hello.
Oh, hello. I'm sorry. So Yes, I was in the workshop on Saturday, and you know, I had this. It felt like a real experience of a process that I would love to check out, please. So,
okay,
because it was a new. It felt like from a new vantage point. So it felt like as a kid, you know, like as a little kid, there was a point in time when something happened and, you know, I had my feelings, the emotions and whatever, and it felt like there was this innocence where all of it was okay. And then, you know, one time there was all of a sudden, you know, maybe it was through a trauma or something probably significant, where I interjected meaning that from other people, from my parents or from a teacher or whatever. There were several examples I could come from. And it was like in that moment, it felt like duality was created. And I said, oh, then it became like, well, there was, you know, good feelings, there were right feelings, I was safe or I was unsafe, or there were bad feelings, there were wrong feelings, and all of that, and so I guess maybe I'll stop there to say, does that sound like, am I on a kind of a right track? In other words, it felt like, you know, there's no one's fault here. I just, you know, my parents had, you know, got their meaning making from their parents and their parents and their parents. Just felt like this whole, I don't know, just a release of, or kind of like a real freedom and compassion that there's nothing, you know, it just is what happened. There's,
right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So what I heard you say, we often, the way we describe it, it sounds really personal, right? It happened to me. This is what happened, etc. And what I think you're pointing us to, right, Diane? Is it Diane or Diana?
That's Diana.
Diana. Is you're describing seeing how we're conditioned, right? And the process of conditioning that goes from generation to generation to generation. So that innocence is available. It comes into contact with some external or whatever input, some event. And you see how the structure of conditioning gets created into duality. And this is right, and this is wrong. And here's a belief, and here's an assumption, and here's what we project, and here's what we do to survive. And when we realize it's a process, there is a tremendous sense of relief because we finally step out of feeling responsible.
Ah, yes.
It's what we're talking about with Catherine, right? That self-hate is a process that maintains a sense of self. And so when we can see it as something that happens, like a tree grows, children are conditioned, then you don't have to blame your mother, and you certainly don't have to blame yourself or feel like the person who's blamed by that very process, right? We're victims of that process, but we're also told that we shouldn't be, and that somehow it's all related to you. So absolutely. I mean, I think that was the objective of the workshop, to disidentify from the conditioning as who and what we are, and to see it as a process that is not what we are. And once we see it, we're free to live our lives in this moment rather than by being controlled by it.
Yes, that was helpful because it feels like that once for, you know, for this human, I guess, once I see this kind of like this tree or this process, that I can start identifying, oh, that's ego. Oh, when I say always or never or, you know, somehow comparative this, comparative that, however that, you know, I have my own little things, my own little wordings, it's like, oh, that's ego. And so I start to then be able to catch when I'm in, I think actually someone on the call said ego land, and I was like, oh, that's so perfect. Yes, I'm in ego land right now. So it's helpful to help.
It helps, is very helpful.
Disidentification, yes. Thank you.
Yes, it is very helpful. It's why we do it, right? That's why we, when we first come to practice, we diagram it. We bring awareness to it, to what its attributes. It's all about negativity, the illusion of control, comparison, distraction, fear. We give it all of those labels so that when it happens to us, we can recognize it's happening to us, rather than before practice when we believe it is what we are, right? I'm thinking it, it's in my head, so that's who I am. There's no freedom in that.
Yes, perfect. Thank you very, very much, Deep Gesher.
Well, thank you, Diana. Deep Gesher.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us, Diana. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Michael, did I lose you?
I'm here. I think we just got our next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
I forgot to unmute myself.
There we go.
This is Mark in Bellingham, Washington.
Hey, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
Hi. Very good to be here. Excellent, excellent. I wanted to run something by you in terms of an experience I've had over the last couple of weeks. And it started, it's actually about control. And the part of the control that it's about is a recognition that there is no control. And last month, my wife contracted the virus and had to be hospitalized for a week in order to recover. She gave it to me, and I did not have the strong symptoms, but I slept a whole lot here at the house. I wasn't able to visit her at the hospital. We could only talk on the phone. I couldn't go anywhere or do anything. I fortunately had enough food in the house so I could at least, you know, prepare something for me to eat. I wasn't that hungry to begin with, but at least I had something to do here. And so what I found myself doing one afternoon was sitting down in the dining room looking out the window and started to repeat the words to myself, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to my wife. I don't know what's going to happen to me. I don't know what's going to happen in the next breath. There just is that I don't know and a recognition that control just does not exist. And the out of control in so many previous experiences has been to get into a high state of stress, anxiety, and that type of thing. And what happened this time was just the opposite. I felt a very comforting calm appear, and right with it, love and gratitude for just everything. And and so I just I was able to sit there being in that experience of calmness and no control and love and gratitude, primarily for the practice, for the guide, for Sangha, for all that has happened in my life, because I can recognize that everything that has happened to me in the way of circumstance or event was for my benefit. It's always been for my benefit. And so rather than being in a high state of anxiety, I was in just the opposite place and just loved it. And shortly thereafter was kind of hoping that there was more crisis and, you know, in life so that I could get to this place again.
Uh-huh. That's interesting, right? So Mark, what I heard you say, I mean, I was listening to something, and this person who was talking said something about how dissatisfaction is an unnatural state, ego is an unnatural state, which is why we are in touch with wanting something different, right? And so to actually surrender ego and be in that place that you were just telling us about is such a natural place. It's the place that we can live. And so the out of control, the needing to be in control, which is an ego place, is a very stressful place. But surrendering the ego and being in the flow of life where we are identified with, if we could use that word, life, which doesn't know, which is grateful, which simply is here, which simply is, we could stop there, is the experience that you're pointing at, right? Because what we're told from an ego perspective is if you're not in control, it's going to feel awful. And therefore, in order to not feel awful, get into control. Until we have an experience like you're talking about where we actually experience what it means not to be controlled by ego. And that is an experience that's easy to get addicted to.
Yes, it certainly was.
Right? And that's where, you know, if we're paying attention, which is why I said it is interesting, the attachment arises, right? That's a subtle way of, I want it. There's a way in which it can either be an attachment from an ego place, which is this, I want to hold on to this experience, or I want to seek this experience.
Yes.
Or that place of that heart desire to say, this is the intentionality with which I want to live, and I'm going to practice, so this is the experience I have my attention on, or this is the awareness that I'm identified with. Not the controlled place of ego, but being in the flow of life, because
it's such
an exquisite feeling.
It does sneak in rather slippery, doesn't it?
It does. Sorry, Mark, I think I got bumped off. So would you say what you said again?
Oh, no, I was making a comment about how egocentricity is such a slippery devil in terms of having me get to a place very quickly about wanting to stay there or get there.
That's right, right? From here to let's get here.
Chaos would come more frequently.
Yeah, exactly so, exactly so. And we just pay attention to that arising of a genuine, authentic enjoyment of the now that gets taken over by a movement away from the now.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Good to see. Always good to see.
Always good to see. And always, and I would say, right, Mark, that experience is never going to be taken away from you, right? It's transformed. It's such a transformational transfigurative experience that it will be with you as what you're seeking, and that will guide you back to it in a way that's not about ego's controlling orientation of getting you to it. That's what it wants to say, right? We want to seek this experience.
No, I definitely get the fact that experience is always there at any time I want.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you both so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. Ashwini, I love that enthusiasm for I don't know and lack of control. And it's just so freeing because, control seems ever elusive. And the degree to which I have control is defined by conditioning. And so, I'm being controlled by ego, of course, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those Russian doll images, right? You just keep having to disidentify and disidentify and disidentify because at every layer there is an attempt to control.
Yes, exactly. And we have another caller here.
Okay.
next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rochelle from Charlotte.
Hey, Rochelle.
Hey, Rochelle.
Hi.
What a delight to hear your voice.
Well, I haven't called in a while. This day ends up being one of my busiest days, and when I do call in, I end up falling asleep on y'all. So I just want to call and let y'all know that I'm doing fine. I'm still practicing and doing well in the midst of all this chaos, paying attention.
Well, good to hear that you are, and welcome.
Well, very good, very good. I've enjoyed the conversation so far, and I do think at least one of those things that has helped me recently is giving up the illusion of control.
Yes,
that has been very calming. Kind of frees you up to be in the moment and deal with what's actually going on right at the present, rather than all the imagined things and trying to plan and figure out things. It's just like, okay, so what's going on today that I need to take care of?
Yes.
And tomorrow
it's
we'll
that acceptance.
And accept it, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's that acceptance that Catherine was talking about, right? That instead of trying to be in control, which we know we don't have anyway, when we accept that we don't, it's exactly what you said. There's so much more freedom to be here. To be here for what is, rather than how it should be or how I could make it different or bang my head against something that I'm never going to be able to change.
Exactly, exactly. Or fall in the trap of listening to conditioning telling you what it's going to be like and then trying to prepare for what conditioning says it's going to be, because, you know, conditioning doesn't know a thing about anything.
So true.
Yeah,
so true.
Yeah.
Right. To be here for how it is rather than plan for how conditioning says it's going to be, and then missing out on what it is.
Yeah. And so I, but otherwise, I've been doing well. I think the only thing with all this going on is I have not seen my parents in person since February, and I realize that they are doing fine and isolating at home, and that I have a greater chance of carrying, you know, COVID to them. And being a healthcare worker. And so I miss seeing them terribly. They're both have a little bit of memory problems, so I talk to them on the phone, but I always worry that something's going on or they forgot to tell me something or what have you. And so I think that's an area of content that conditioning can get in there and make me worry and beat me up about I'm not doing enough or I should do this, that, or the other. And so that's been, I think, the tricky part of dealing with this. I can deal with the business and the practice, and I can deal with taking care of patients and everything else. I think the thing I worry about is just my parents.
It's another place where we're being asked to let go of control, right, Rochelle?
Oh, most definitely.
Right?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you record and listen with her?
I beg your pardon?
Do you record and listen with the person who's worried?
Oh, yeah. And we've talked about it quite a bit. And I know that I'm doing what I need to do, is touch base with them and make sure they're doing okay. But I should not see them. I should not introduce that risk to them, and being okay with that. And I know it's a piece of content that conditioning uses to pull me out of the present moment type of thing. And when I call them, they're doing fine. You know, they're completely fine type of thing. It's just an area of control and worry, and it's so unusual for us as a family. We're very close. We get together quite often and stuff, and so this is quite unusual.
Well, and I don't know if this is your experience, right? For me, it's almost religious, because where I need to practice, where I need to have faith, where I need to give up control is what I'm always being offered. That opportunity, right? And so, that there's a way in which we could say we know many things intellectually or even experientially, and then we really have to practice with it, because it still can get us to suffer with it.
Yeah.
And that's where the tremendous compassion is brought to the situation, right? Because despite all that, there's someone who cares very deeply, who's not able to do something that is an expression of that caring because of circumstances, and the voices can still come in and have an opinion about that.
Right? Yeah. And it's an opportunity to practice around it. Yeah.
Yes, to practice acceptance of something that you haven't had a chance to fully embrace.
That's very helpful. Because I haven't looked at it as an opportunity to practice, just as an area of suffering. So that's good. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, right, Rochelle, especially for people like us who practice a lot, we think we get acceptance, but we don't, right?
Exactly.
What we don't accept, or we can accept, and not that we don't accept it, because that's how conditioning gets us to still go with it, right? I should accept it, and I do accept it. Except that I'm having an experience of non-acceptance.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And that's exactly what it is. It's an experience of non-acceptance. It's you know, it keeps saying, I know I'm not, I know this, I know that. And it's like, no, but I'm still having the experience of fighting against it.
Yes. Exactly. And so once we see that, we are accepting that, right? Now I'm back in acceptance.
Yeah. Oh, this is good. This is helpful. This is very helpful.
Yeah, very subtle, right? We don't see the process we're in unless it's reflected to us. Because the words that we're using are saying we're in a different process, but we're not.
Yeah, and the words are caught in the conversation and not in the actual real experience of what's going on.
Bingo. Exactly.
This was very helpful. Mm-hmm. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, but I'm take care of yourself.
And I'm still here. That's just Tuesdays are kind of difficult to call in, but I'm still here, and I really greatly appreciate everybody. We can get through this together. So, yeah.
We certainly can, and thank you for everything you do.
Thank you. Thank y'all for being there. I could not do this without practice. I think so. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Deep gosho rosho.
Deep gosho rihau.
Hey, Ashwini, can you hear me? This is Bob.
Hey, Bob. Thank you very much.
Sure. Hopefully Michael's okay there. I'm going to try and bring on the next caller. Give me a second here to find my place.
Oh,
next
hello.
Caller, you're now unmuted. Will you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Pasha.
Hey, Pasha.
Hey, Pasha.
Hi. So good to be here, despite of technical difficulties. And whatever's
what
going
are you
on. I like the previous conversation and can connect to to kind of hearing the voices talking about practice. And what I noticed, I look at my recorder, and it's like it shows like a time and a date when I made my recording. And I didn't do any recording today, and that was strange because I heard the voice saying something like, "Oh, well, you know, like I had the recording, but it wasn't actually with the recorder. It was with the voice in my head."
Oh wow, that is really good to see, huh? That level of delusion, right? That I've actually made the recording, but I haven't. And fortunately, I have a record of my last date, of the timestamp of my last recording, so I can really see what a lie that voice in my head can get me to believe. That voice in my head can get me to believe.
I had the conversation with the voice in my head, thinking that I'm making a recording, but then noticing it's not. And also, that reminds me, the conversation was like, well, what you gonna talk about? Are you gonna talk about this, this, and that? And that was kind of end of it.
It can be quite scary, right, Pasha, when we see it that way. The extent to which I have fully intended to record. And I have a conversation in my head about what I'm going to record, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, the extent of the control is so interesting to see. And then also to see that somehow or the other, you wake up out of it. You check your recorder, and I haven't recorded. And so then I get to pick up my recorder and record.
Yes. And it was funny because my kind of recording and listening practice is going well. And I have I make regular recordings and listen to them all the time. And I noticed the voice is talking about, well, why do I do that? It's like I don't get like immediate visible benefit from doing it. So I had like nothing to answer to that voice, you know. But what came up is I do that because of because that's my practice. This is it's like, what is it saying? Like religious observances, you know.
Yes.
It's just what I do, and I don't need to be questioned by any voice, and give them proof. You know, why is it? I have to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's such a brilliant observation, right, Pasha? Because we can see an attribute conditioned mind is that it's outcome oriented. And it's all about benefits. You do this in order to get this, right? The conditionality that is the construct of conditioned mind. And to watch the voice say, well, why are you doing it? Because you don't get a benefit. And to recognize that that's actually not just a voice in my head. That's an assumption or a perspective that I don't buy into. Because the truth is, the reason I do this is because that's what I do. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not trying to be somebody, fix something, have a particular experience. This is just simply what I do. If I record, the benefit is in the recording. The process is the outcome. There isn't something I'm leaving. I'm not leaving this process to get something else. I'm not doing this process to get something else. Yeah.
Yes. And I've proven myself multiple times, you know, the benefits.
Yeah.
And my experience when I record and listen, after that, there is some kind of silence, kind of comfortable silence of being with somebody who loves you, and we kind of finish the conversation, and we are still there together in love. And there is nothing more to add, nothing more to say, because it's complete. But there is that saying, but there is that feeling of a company, of being with the mentor and being at peace.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That the recording is complete in the experience, right? There's a sense of love, there's a sense of companionship, there's a sense of silence. And I would project, right, Pasha, that the ability to redirect attention and to train the way you're training with the recorder allows you to actually see a voice that that asks you what's the benefit of this, and you don't have to respond to that or believe it.
Yes, yes, it's it's another kind of bamboozle to get me into that conversation, rather than So and it was
rather
just
than stick your experience.
Yes, and it was just a funny to see. It made me laugh when I saw that the date on the recorder. So
And that's a that's lovely too, right? Because it allows us to get here. Laughter implies that we're not taking ego seriously. There's no need to go to self-hate. There's a wow. Yeah, that happened. Now I will pick up the recorder and record.
Yes, and I'll do it again after the show. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you, Pasha.
Thank you, Pasha.
Thanks, Pasha. And I'm going to try and bring on the next caller here, Ashwini. Next caller, you're now unmuted. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Laura from San Diego.
Hey, Laura.
Hey. So, let's see. I love it when there's a hidden expectation that gets revealed so there's an expectation that I was just going to be listening today. So I love getting caught off guard.
Oh, you love it when ego gets off guard, right?
Right.
Caught off guard.
So let's see. So I've been practicing with using the recorder to look at how I get stuck and caught in duality. And it seems to be hitting on a very strong piece of karma, because I find myself as I'm recording or as I'm approaching it to be very, I feel very identified and disconnected. Like, so when I'm recording, I don't feel present. I feel like I'm very, it's very robotic. And so what I was going to say is I've seen that, it just feels like I'm not, like, it's like I'm not allowed to be present. Like even now in talking about it, I feel like I'm talking, but I don't feel present to the person who's talking. I don't know if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And here's what perhaps a way to explore it, right, Laura, is that that's the duality you're in, right?
Hmm.
A duality is that I'm not feeling the way I should. Is being in a duality between how it should be and how it isn't.
Uh-huh.
There is no. That's the reason we don't feel. It's a giant clue to the place I'm looking from. Right? If I'm not present, if I'm not present, how do I know I'm not present? I'm listening to a voice saying that to me, which implies that I'm in the world of opposites, where my current experience is not the experience I'm supposed to have. It's the hardest duality to catch on to, which is not positively between two choices, but a negation of an existing experience. But that is the fundamental duality, right?
So I hear you, and there's resonance and I can't seem to find words to, like, I'm like, yeah, okay, right? You know, like, I'm with you, but I there's nothing. I don't know, even have words to respond. That's all right. And that's the thing that I've, in my experience with the recorder, you keep talking. You keep talking. Because what the voice is attempting you to do is, I'm not feeling anything here, so you might as well quit. But we talk ourselves into the present. There is this is my experience over and over again, that I'm in the mental process, and it takes a lot for me to get out of that mental process into conscious awareness. So if it takes me all day of talking, I'm going to do that. Huh. Right? I don't feel it. It's the way we often talk about it, right? If you're not grateful, say thanks till you are. If you don't feel present, keep talking to the recorder till you do, because you will. The ego cannot withstand that scrutiny, right? So you just keep saying, I don't feel present. I wish I could, but I don't. And, you know, this beautiful plant in front of me has three different shades. At some point, you'll watch. The attention will shift to awareness, and you'll feel here. But you have to persist beyond the barrier of the conversation that says, I'm not having the experience.
Yes. So it feels like I, like, not giving up on the human, like, not so just, like, I imagined, like, you know, being with my kids, like, I'm not going to give up with them just on them because they're whatever. Like, I'm going to stick with the relationship no matter what. So what I'm hearing from you is that I'm not after an experience. I'm staying with the commitment to the relationship, to the human, and trust that presence will arise if I stick with the commitment.
Right, because presence, it's that whole beautiful David White poem, right? If you don't know where you are, the forest knows. It'll find you. Right? As long as I stay here looking, it will find me. I don't have to know. I don't have to be the only one looking. We never are. You're staying in your intention to being with the human being, and so you will be found. It sounds magical, but it's a very profound experience of how it is. Which is why you won't quit, right?
Right.
Which is what will keep you recording till presence finds you.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's my duty. Thank you.
And what would help, right, Laura, is that what helps me is some of the things you would want to bring your attention to while you're talking, right? Because if you keep saying, I don't feel present, then there's a way in which that's what I'm listening to, right, as I'm saying it. But if you allow to talk about presence or what is here, so I'm walking on the street, here's my feet, I have five fingers and toes, they're gripping, there's sunlight on that red leaf, and it looks so beautiful, and I just felt the wind against in my face, and there's the sunshine, and all of a sudden, as you start to talk about what is in the present, then we get to presence. So that's some way to train ourselves, right? When I'm not feeling present, first of all, I have to train myself to pick up the recorder. Then I have to train myself not to quit. Then I have to train myself to the questions that would assist me to get here and keep doing it and not quit on that.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. I feel it feels clear that the direction to practice with. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. Ashwini, I'm going to try and bring on another caller here.
Okay.
Hey, Next caller, you're now unmuted. Will you please introduce yourself? Next caller?
I'm here. Hi, Ashwin, it's Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Can you hear me? I was muted.
Yes. I can hear you.
Yeah, great. The workshop was amazing. It was really good. And what I am looking at right now in particular is kind of along the lines of the year-long retreat. It's super exciting. I this has been a really great practice time for me in terms of having the opportunity to spend more time doing practice. So I have a feeling for everyone who's going through all their pain and all of that. And I also feel blessed to have this opportunity for all this practice. So just want to say that I've really turned to practice for this time period. So I love it. And, what I've been working with is, I think I mentioned it on the morning show, is getting up in the morning. I haven't really wanted to get up in the morning, and I like to say the practical piece of it, the content, just because it's leading to so many things that I'm seeing. And the most recent one is related to dreams and how I noticed that I have been having a lot of bad dreams. Like, I didn't realize how much conditioning was getting me in the middle of the night. So I just started a new process of listening, which I've done this in the past, but I'm doing it again, which is basically all I feel like you do is do the same thing over and over, but it's different every time. And so I am listening to my recordings at night as well as a guided meditation. And so I did that last night and did not have any bad dreams. So I woke up in a completely different mood than I normally do.
It is very helpful. So we say this very often, right, Renee, that when we're paying a lot of attention or we're doing a lot of practice during the day, then conditioning does not have the same access to us, right? And so when we go to bed at night and we've relaxed that attention, then that's where it reigns supreme. And so we know that. We know that practice says that. And what practice says is listen to your recordings all night and so that conditioning doesn't have access to you during the night. And you did that. And you had a completely different experience. It's such a practice success, right?
Yeah. And it feels like that everything is related to the same thing with this. So as dismantling every piece of it and I loved what Catherine said, like just, you know, to suffer, to see, sort of like it becomes kind of a discovery process, an exciting discovery process. And so, you know, I'm suffering here. What is that about? I'm going to now dismantle that part of it. And and that's the experience I'm having. And and it makes me want to practice, like, sit, like I didn't just sit, and it's not like you have to sit or you have to record a lesson, but I want to go see what's going to happen next is sort of where I'm at right now, which,
A happy, blessed opportunity, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's such a beautiful place to be, to move from practice as a goal of ending suffering to being in the process of ending suffering. And so then there's curiosity and there's excitement and there's fascination and then there's engagement and participation, right? The life force gets released for the life force rather than being bound to some ego limitation that has to be achieved that's impossible.
Yes. Right, exactly. Right, because in ego there is nothing possible. So
yeah.
So nothing is possible when you're identified as ego, and then it just sets that goal up. And for me, it's the achieving, so it really gets tricky. And so, it can so easily switch into that. What you just said is, I have a goal, and my goal is this, and it just doesn't work. I mean, it just period doesn't work. And So just to become curious and to make it a process of learning, just like the workshop was talking about, and just to be on that journey. And it's just so, I don't know, it's so, it's such a better way to live, I guess. It's really all.
It is. That we see the benefit of the shift in perspective, right? That the game that I'm playing is a completely different game. And in that game, there is enjoyment and curiosity and fascination. And it's a worthy opponent. So sometimes I'm going to find myself in its game. And I learn to become better at recognizing when it's got the winning hand, dropping it and switching to my way of playing the game or life's way of playing the game.
Right. And I think what you're pointing at too is like the other thing that Sherry said that struck me in the workshop was I choose the courageous human being who's doing the practice, just that person. You know, I choose that person, which immediately puts you into a compassionate, loving relationship with yourself. So like I choose the courageous person. And if I've said that to myself since the workshop a few times, quite a bit. And I also want to report that I actually had a day of no self-hate, because after that workshop, I was just, you know, in presence the rest of the day and so on. So it's great.
Yes. Well, I think what you keep pointing us to, right, Renee, is that when we use the tools of practice, we have the experience that the tools of practice will give you. So if I was offered this tool of choosing the human being or celebrating the human being or appreciating the human being, then that process, that tool, is the tool that gets my attention on compassion. So now I am in compassion and not self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I practice what is being offered, I will have that experience. And I keep proving that to myself. And in doing so, eroding the resistance to doing it. Because my experience keeps proving to me what happens when I choose the tool, when I go with the guidance.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yep. Yes. Yeah, and so I think what you're saying is if we just did the guidance, the tool, and followed it without really having that resistance, we would just find presence every time.
That's exactly right. Well, and I was celebrating the practitioner who did that, right?
Yeah. And the resistance is something to practice with, so you can just turn it right back to using the tool with the resistance. Mm. Yes,
because it takes a while before we recognize that it's the resistance, and going against the resistance is what allows us to, the next time around, recognize it as resistance and build the muscle to pick up the recorder and do whatever it is that we need to do that we've been offered that will assist us not to go with the resistance. And the more we do it, it's that devotion and ever-expanding faith.
Yeah, and that resistance is unconscious, and then but if we picked up the tool just to do it, even if we're unconscious, then we'll find it, we'll find that practice.
Bingo, exactly.
It will lead us back to presence,
Yeah,
well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Renee.
Thanks, Renee. I love that conversation, Ashwini, because what it was pointing out to me was that any time I'm choosing to be to turn my attention to a practice, it could be any practice, right? It could be listening to the show or being on the workshop on Saturday or whatever, that the only thing that practice is going to lead to is me being supported in practicing and just being here. And that it's like it's always the best way to support this human being.
Yeah, it truly, and that the sort of adage that goes with that is what you practice is what you have. And so if I'm in that process of practice, then what I'll have is what practice gives us, which is being here.
Yeah. Without the, for me, the added, like, the content piece of it, right? Yes, I'm doing content in the midst of all that, but that isn't the focus of the practice.
Mm, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That isn't the focus of the practice. The focus of the practice is presence regardless of content.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of the show, Ashwini. I'm sure Michael will be back next week, and hopefully we'll sort out whatever technical issues there were.
Well, thank you, Bob, for jumping in.
Sure.
Thank you always for jumping in.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Bye-bye.